Welcome to math class. Today we're going to talk about and explore different ways of teaching math and making things stick in the mind of a first grader. And that has been difficult for me. Just learning how to, I remember especially the first couple years I taught, learning how to break things down in simple terms for a first grader or a kindergartner. And it depends on how much knowledge they have of numbers when they come. And children's knowledge of numbers, especially I've thought about their sense of numbers and time, is sometimes nothing. We've all heard children say things like, oh, you know, 16 minutes ago something happened. They just kind of toss numbers out there and they really have no idea what they're actually saying or what they're meaning, but their sense of especially time and numbers can be difficult to help them to understand. So, what is math? It is the relationship between figures and forms, and relations between quantities expressed symbolically, which is what a lot of math is numbers and symbols. And like I said, understanding numbers and creating a number sense in children can be difficult. I'm not planning to lecture all this class. This class was kind of hard for me to pull together. So I broke it down into different subjects, things that first graders that you teach in first grade math. And at the end of each subject, I would kind of like to, if there are those of you that have taught first grade, to give your ideas of things that have worked for you, because I feel like I need inspiration just as much as you do. And if you haven't taught, feel free to ask questions. Don't feel like you're asking weird questions. So, what do we teach in math, and how do we make them aware and understand the concepts? Be sure they understand the concepts they need for the time, but don't try to go far and beyond. I know there have been times where I've been teaching a certain subject, even something as basic as clocks or something like that, and I get all wrapped up in it, and of course we know much more than just what they're learning for that day. Maybe that day they're just learning simply about the hour hand. And it's very tempting for me sometimes to just try to teach everything about clocks right away. And I have found that can just be so confusing for them. A couple years I would just, not even really without thinking about it, would end up doing that, and it just brought confusion. And so it's okay to just teach things little bits at a time. All right, counting. Show math as much as possible. Children love seeing things. They love seeing pictures, toys, things to use that help them. Make sure they understand not only how to count, but also that numbers mean more and less. Just the simple thing of 5 Cheerios is less than 8 Cheerios. Sometimes that concept is the more and less thing can be difficult for them. And if they don't understand that concept, that can really mess up with a lot of things. Sure, they can stand there and rattle off numbers 1 to 20 or 100 or whatever, but if they don't know that numbers are bigger and smaller, it is rather meaningless. Use counting charts. Have them point to the numbers as they count. Have them find numbers on the chart as you say them, or have a student say a number for the other students to find. I use these a lot. Kind of tattered and worn, but I have enough of these that pretty much every child can have one. And I use these day after day after day at the beginning of first grade. Pass them out at the beginning of math. And we use them just for counting. I always, especially at the beginning, I make them point to the number as we are counting. I make sure that their number is following as we're going, partly to help with just number recognition and just to make them think about moving down the line. Once they've gotten better at counting, then I'll point to a number or I'll say a number and make them point to it on the chart. Or sometimes I'll let them do that. We'll go around the circle and they'll each say a number and the others have to find it. And they always think that's fun. So involve them as much as you can. They like to be the teacher. March as you count. March in time with whatever you're counting. Make numbers with Play-Doh, pipe cleaners, or draw them in the air with finger. Sometimes I do it on their desk too, have them make it on their desk with their finger. Use objects or students to show amounts. Kind of depends on if you have, how many students you have as to how much you can do this, but especially with kindergarten last year, I had 10 kindergartners, so it was fun to do stuff with them. You can have them stand in groups and figure out which group has more or less. When counting by fives, flash one hand every time they say a number. Counting by tens, flash both hands. Sometimes I'll put them in pairs and let them clap hands as they're counting. Can I get you to do it with me?
So five, ten, we go back and forth. Okay. Or for if we're counting by tens, then they do both hands at once. It'll be 10, 20, like that.
They always like that. And it can get a little bit chaotic sometimes, but they like that. All right. Any suggestions on the whole number counting thing? Anything that you've done or questions that you have?
I have a little song that goes with the counting by tens.
Okay.
That really helps. I mean, I'm not in the mood to sing, but it was really good to learn that. I had learned a lot last year at papers.
Okay.
That was one idea that they gave, is learn a little chance to do with it. I think that is very
It does help. Yeah. Would you want to write it down sometime? Is it to the tune of something familiar?
Okay. Doesn't really have, like,
is it more of a chant than a song?
More of a chant,
okay.
But it's really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love songs. That songs are chants. That's always extremely helpful. Thank you for that. Anything else? Okay. Patterns. And I probably deal with this almost more in kindergarten than I do in first grade, but they do have it in first grade some. Figuring out a pattern of things. And these are so old and tattered, but I still use them a lot. Just figuring out this is rather difficult, but it's just all different shapes, triangles, circles, and then different colors or squares. And just figuring out, you know, you might have two purple, one orange, one pink, two purple, one orange, one pink. And just to teach them, help them figure out a pattern of something. You can draw pictures or have them draw pictures. Okay, clocks. I always like teaching time. It's something fun. It's something most times they come to first grade not knowing much about time. Some children do, but kind of, I don't know. I always find that it's, once they learn how to tell time, it's kind of a big victory to them or something kind of big that they've learned. Anyway, I have several of these. I also have the big, well, it's like the clock back there, the big Judy clocks. But then I have several of these, and this actually has gears in it too, and so it's small, they can play with it. So the little hand is the hour hand, and he's the littlest and gets to go first. And also for the hour hand, we always, it points to the numbers, the big numbers that you see on the clock. And then the big hand comes last, and it's the minute hand. One thing that I try to stress quite a bit is that you always have the hour hand, and then there are always two digits after the hour. And I don't know, that seems like it can be kind of hard sometimes for first graders to remember, especially with the five. They want to say it's 2-5 or whatever. And so I go over that a lot right at the beginning when they're learning about clocks, is that there has to be two numbers after the hour. And for the long hand, you count by fives. anyway, I go into much bigger, longer explanations than this, but anyway, I found that especially with clocks, once they get it, it's something fun that they can do together. Just this past year, I got something that was really fun for them. I have a magnetic chalkboard, and it's the center part, the gear part, is just by itself. It's a circle with big, huge hands going off, and put that in the middle. And then each number is a separate magnet, and then you just place them around. So it ends up taking up almost the entire chalkboard, or the height of it. Anyway, so I'll put that up on the chalkboard, and then I'll write times up on the chalkboard, and then they have to move the hands to where it belongs, and they just loved that this past year. That was really fun. One thing I did one year was I had my children make clocks for art. I just got white paper plates, and then I bought foam number stickers, and I kind of forget. I think I just made arrows or hands out of construction paper or whatever, and then stuck a brad in the middle, and they loved it. It was fun for them. Kind of had their own little clock. You can put the numbers on your own clock that you use in your classroom. Put it around the o'clock, 15, 30, 45. And that's supposed to be clock, not clack. All right. What do you do to help teach time? Do you ever find that it's something hard for them to understand or for them to get? I think a lot of it just is a lot of practice. I've had times, I think it was not last year, the year before, where we'd been doing it for a month or so, and all of a sudden it was as if they just forgot that I'd ever taught them how to do clocks. So I'm not sure always what is going on up there that makes them forget, but.
Do you have any tips for if the minute hand is at the 11?
Mm-hmm.
So if it's at 2:55,
mm-hmm.
So often when it's 3:55.
Yeah. I had a couple that really struggled with that last year, and I didn't really come up with anything great. I finally just told them, I said, if the long hand is anywhere from about the 8 or 9 up to the 12, then when you look at the hour hand, just automatically it goes to the number before. And there was especially one that really struggled with it. And it seemed like that for her was simple enough for her to think about, and she got it after that. Yeah, it is difficult. It's so close, especially when it's at the 11. It's very hard for them. Okay, on to place value. I don't know about you, but I think this is probably the hardest thing for them to... It seems like it takes them the longest to grasp this, and maybe I don't know how to teach it well enough for them to grasp it right away, but... How many of you have ever heard of Matthew C? Are any of you familiar with that? I taught it to a couple different students years ago, and that actually kind of gave me a better understanding of place value, even for myself as a teacher. One thing that he talks about in there is, especially with the tens, you have like 20, 30, 40. He explains it as like 2T, as in like 2 tens, 30, 3 tens. And I think it was the year after that, then when I was just teaching first grade, that I used that method with my first graders, and I was amazed. They caught on to it just like that, and it was really good. I also use this place value chart. I use this a lot. Talk about how numbers live in houses, and you can... Sometimes I'll just, instead of using this, I'll even just draw houses. Little house. Bigger house. And a great big house. And just the fact that only 9 ones are ever allowed in the ones house. Absolutely no more. Then you have the tens house, and the hundreds house. And I do like this thing because this is something that they can use a lot. They play with it. One thing I do a lot of when I'm teaching place value at the very beginning is writing a list of numbers up on the chalkboard and then having them come up and figure out the how many straws go in each house. These are just the ones, and then these are groups of tens, and then the group 10 groups makes equals 100. I also use this a lot. I got these a couple years ago, and they're super handy. And if you're teaching CLV math, it's almost identical to what they have in their books. So that makes it very nice. And this is also something that they play with. They do it to each other. I'll get them out, and they'll write up numbers on the board for each other and make each, or whoever they're doing it with, will put the magnets up. Another thing I've done for helping to understand place value is I always like to do a count up somehow to the 100th day. And so I had three cups sitting out, or three jars sitting out with ones, tens, and hundreds on them. And then as we get to every 10th day, then we would bundle that group of 10 up, 10 straws up, and put it over into the 10's house. And then every once in a while they'd count or keep track to see how many days we were at. And then once we got to the 100th day, then it was time to bundle them all up and stick them in the great big jar that we had. That was really fun. It was something that it kind of felt like every day you were kind of working with place value almost a little bit. It was something for them to think about. All right. What do you do to help with place value? Or is it not hard for your students to get?
I have a little, the blue blocks. I have plastic ones.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and I've often wished for something that I like the idea, but it was another, I think it was somewhere at Faith Builders of Math. Our school has a CD that I was listening to, and she said to just teach place value from day one. Like,
mm-hmm.
So I pretty much introduced, I don't know if you do or not, but introduced, like used, I didn't have to explain everything.
Mm-hmm.
But used the, I have a chart just like that, and I made little houses to kind of go in each pocket,
mm-hmm.
and the little ones go in the first house, and yeah, just
mm-hmm.
kind of explained it as they went.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like, yeah, my kindergartners anyway, just, yeah, I'm waiting to see how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I should try that with kindergarten, see if it makes a difference in at least introducing it. And
yeah, at least introducing
it. I'll have to try that this year. I would love to. I also really like those magnetic ones for when I'm teaching carrying. I'll actually make math facts out of them.
I'll stick, you know, if you're doing 45 plus 27, then I'll stick the 27 underneath and use them as math facts. And that seemed to really help. I did that, I think I started doing that 2 years ago. And
that seemed like they caught on to that fairly quickly.
The thing I really like is the place value flashcards from Rebecca.
Okay.
They have like bundles of mini balloons or something like for the 10. And
mm-hmm.
then like you flash the picture side to them and they say the number. And I'll teach that from day, I'll use those cards from day one. I teach one, it'll be in the wrong place.
Okay.
And they're pretty pricey if you buy them for Rebecca, but you can get them used online for like pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach the other ladies that set of flashcards.
Mm-hmm. You say they're called place value flashcards. Okay, thank you. All right. Calendar. I like to start off fairly quickly talking about the months of the year to them, days of the week. This is another thing that sometimes can be a hard concept. They don't even think about what day it is or what tomorrow is, what yesterday was. sometimes I'll ask, so what's today? Saturday? I really have no idea. I think it's very important to have a calendar in your room. I have a big one that I change every month, and I keep an arrow. We use an arrow to mark the day, what day it is. Whoever's the student of the day that day, they get to move the arrow. And it's really helped, just that visual of being able to see where you're at in a month has really helped them to catch on to just time factor, where you're at and how many days it is until something. If there's special days, I usually put that up on the calendar, and then they have a more of a sense of where we are in a month. Writing the date correctly, I teach that pretty much right away. Okay, math facts. What first grade is all about, right? Show it, say it, and write it. And sometimes I feel like this is one of the most monotonous things about first grade, is how many flashcards there are doing it over and over and over. But it is important. I know it differs in the type of curriculum you have. I teach CLE, and they learn a lot of facts in a year. It sometimes feels like it's too many, but it's what it is. So I'd like to try to time them quite a bit, see how many they can get in a minute. And you have to be careful with that. Some students don't do well with timers, so don't make them freak out too badly. But I do time them a lot throughout the year, and I often have some incentive thing going, a chart, or it can be as simple as a chart with stickers, or if they can get more than they did the day before, I'll even time them as a group and then write the amount of time up on the chalkboard, and then the next day at math class we'll do it again. We'll just see if they can beat it, and it's not necessarily, they don't get any reward or anything for it, but they love to see if they can say them faster than they did the day before. And in first grade, it can almost feel a little bit hard because they're constantly learning new facts. It's not like you just have one set of facts that they've been learning for how long. So sometimes it can be a little bit hard for them to even continue getting more or taking less time than the day before because they're always getting new facts every day, pretty much. Hang facts on the wall. Seems like there have been some years where some children, that just makes it easier if they're up on the wall. I don't do that every year, but I know there was one year where there was some that really struggled with their facts. And once I started hanging them up, it just, seemed to help them. And sometimes I almost think maybe when they're hanging up, then I see them and think about them and we go over them more. So maybe that's just me. Chant them. Chant the facts together. Use bumblebee charts. These are, I think, Rod and Staff. I've had them forever, so I'm not sure. They were at school when I started teaching, so. They go from 11 all the way up to 18, and I just place the bumblebees on them as they're learning the facts, and so we'll chant them 6, 5, 11, 7, 4, 11, 9, 2, 11, 8, 3, 11. And once I start hanging these up, I try to do them pretty much every day, and that seems to help, and it's fairly easy to have it up on the wall. And if they're struggling with a fact, say, well, what goes with 8 and 3 or whatever. How many of you use those? Have you found it helpful?
Yeah, really helps them remember.
Mm-hmm. Do you like them?
Yeah, I do. I actually start at 3 or 4.
Okay. One thing that I got a couple years ago, I just felt like my children really needed more practice on facts, and they weren't getting enough just from their everyday work. So I ordered I think they're called Black Lines from Rod and Staff, and I've used those over and over and over. Last year, got to about March, and they just, it's like they hit a block wall, and so, and amazingly enough, they did not mind. I mean, I've gave so many of those papers out, and it was kind of like they knew they needed the practice, and they wanted the practice, and so those helped a lot. And they're set up kind of like this, the bumblebee charts. They'll have up at the top of the page what what family it is or what facts it is. So you can have a whole page of just facts that equal 11 or equal 15 or whatever. Okay, oh, the racing game. This is more talking about doing flashcards. Students form one line with two students at the front. With two students at the front racing to answer first, the winner gets the flashcard and goes to the back of the line. How many of you know what I'm talking about? Have you done that? Can I get some of you to just do it with me, just for fun of it? I thought we would try it. If you want to come up, and I don't know your names, so if you and you, you also have done it. Somebody else raise their hand. Anita, will you come up and help us?
Sure.
And yeah, do you want to come up? Sorry, I'm not being very clear here. Yeah, if you want to come up here and stand facing, so there'll be two of you facing me, standing side by side.
You
go ahead. If I hear your names, I help. All right, so I'm going to hold up a flashcard and see who can say it first. Okay, you got it first, and you get the flashcard, and you go to the back of the line, and then you move forward. Whoops. I know. I have two, and I try to just, Last year, I had a fairly sensitive group, and it seemed like they would, if there was one child that was happening to, they would just, I don't know, either kind of take longer to figure it out, or, like, they would kind of let the other person just get it. I noticed that with some of mine, that, yeah, if they noticed there was one person that just wasn't getting any, they would just let that person get it or whatever. They were so sensitive to each other, bless their hearts. but yeah, it can be hard because you don't want to embarrass them and make them feel like they're not getting it or, yeah. I don't know, what do you do?
I have read where the child that didn't get it gets to the back of the line. It's not like he, you know, is going to learn that much better. But
yeah.
Just switch it up a little bit so that he's not just always staying there. I've struggled with that a little bit, knowing what to do, but that does kind of give him then a different perspective.
Yeah, I just started doing that little, I just learned it in the middle, I think it was in the middle of last school year, and so I was working with this group that was so kind to each other.
Now when I do it, I always had two and two and two. Those two, I would pair them with ability. These two would have been
Oh, It's a little bit the same way with like doing Round the World. You know what I'm talking about, where a child, they stay in their desks, or at least I do have them stay in their desks. And then one child stands up beside their desk, and I flash the card, and whoever gets it usually just gets to keep going. But I have done it the other way, where they have to sit down if they get it, and then the person who doesn't get it gets up. So, yeah, it's definitely easy for them to kind of feel humiliated if they're the one that never gets the flashcard first, because there are going to be ones like that. Do lots of speed drills. I try very hard never to skip a speed drill. Once in a while I do. It's not going to kill them, but they need that, the whole timing thing to make them think of keep going. And what do you do when you have a couple students that just never get the speed drill done or get all discouraged with it? Seems like I run into that about every year. There's just always a couple that get really, really discouraged with it. And
you mean like never get the whole thing finished?
Yeah, or they just don't get very many. They'll only get maybe, well, mine start out with, let's see, what is it? Is there 20 in a minute? I think they start, maybe they start out with 15 at the beginning of the year and then 20, and then it gets, yeah. And they have to have that done in a minute. And for me, in my experience, it seems like they usually do pretty good until January or February, and then suddenly there's tears because they never get their speed drill done. And yeah, it just takes a lot of practice, a lot of work. One thing I've started doing is giving a sticker if they get more or the same amount done as what they did the day before. That way, even the child who is not getting very many done, if they can at least get the same amount as the day before or get more, then they're getting a little reward, and that has helped a lot. It's something for them to work for.
I took a class on learning disabilities in our study. You know, on a spelling bee, those students look up to spell their words, that if you put the noun facts up above,
oh,
that helps some children.
Okay. Is it something about?
When you get a flashcard, you're used to hold it above them. So
okay.
You
have to look up. Yeah. One thing I've done when we're, like, if they're learning a new fact for the day and I'm holding it up, I'll walk back and forth and I'll tell them that I want to see all your eyes following the card as we're chanting it. And I'll wave it around or whatever and watch their eyes.
One thing I do is what you said of, like, whenever we start our, or at least maybe a week or two after we start our speed drills, you know, this is very exciting and they usually love speed drills.
Mm-hmm.
And I start a little, just a little incentive chart, and I put it in the back of their, each one of their books.
Oh, okay.
And we'll check them usually after we do them as a class.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always been students that don't get all of them done almost ever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if they get one or the same or better than they did the day before they used to her.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're done with the book, when my co-teacher said to send it home with them and they need to just, for extra practice, do all the unfinished or the wrong facts.
Oh, okay. Rather than
so
having them correct
least,
them.
Yeah, at least
okay.
To kind of get extra practice out of
them. That's a good idea. I usually just have mine finish theirs in class. Like, they circle the last one that they had gotten done before the timer rang, or when the timer rang, and then finish them there. But that would be a good way of saving some time if you need to as well.
The Faith Builder site has the map you see songs on.
Oh, okay.
With the picture to color and the map, and the songs really sound neat.
Okay. All right. I should look into that.
Like the nines, when you add nine, you have a sweeper. And the sweeper, 9 plus 8, the sweeper always sucks in one to make
okay.
10. I mean, they just have some good
news. What was that? You said it was from Faith Builders?
Faith Builders,
Math.
The doc.
Okay.
Docforlearning.org. It has just hundreds of good hints. It's just full of it. And I think if you probably Google the math one, you'll find it somewhere.
Okay.
But it has the songs and the music and everything.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, any other ideas or suggestions or problems? All right, money. Teach money rhymes. These are three that I use pretty much every year. Penny, penny, easily spent. Copper brown and worth 1 cent. Nickel, nickel, thick and fat. You're worth 5. I know that. And dime, dime, little and thin. I remember, you're worth 10. And you can come up with hand motions and make it really expressive and fun. I use these a lot. Can't remember if we laminated these or if we bought them laminated, but I always hang these up. It has all the different money, dollar, quarters, dimes, nickels, and pennies. And I usually hang up 2 of each, one with the front of the coin and the other one with the back, because they do sometimes switch it up in their lessons. Or you can use real or plastic money. They love counting real money, and that's something that I've done with them in their spare time. Once I feel like they have a good enough concept to do it more on their own, just give them money to count at their desk or with each other, put them in pairs and have them count money together. When they start learning money, you can do a small incentive using pennies, nickels, or dimes. Give them a penny if their lesson is neat or whatever. Have them have a cup in their desk or whatever you want to do, a jar somewhere. And then at the end of the week, they can count up how much money they have. It's just a good way to have them practice, think about how much they have or how much the coins are worth. Hang pictures of money on the wall, like I talked about with those. Okay, does anybody have anything they want to talk about with, in that?
In the CLE curriculum for math, first grade math, as they learn each coin, there's, it kind of gives information, or at least the penny it did, about who's on the coin and stuff. And so I kind of taught them, there's kind of a little chant, and they knew, you know, which guy was on each coin.
Yeah, I often try to talk about, bring the money to life a little bit and talk about it. And I think one year, let's see, yeah, it's on the penny. There's Mr. Lincoln, or the little man sitting up there. I think one year we got the got a real penny and a magnifying glass, and because you can just see it on the real one, so that's kind of fun for them. Okay, for fractions. I always feel like if they get the simple understanding of fractions in first grade, I think it will help them with learning division later on. So I think it is important that they understand fractions well. I often, when they start learning fractions, I often try to bring stuff, food or something fun for them, have them or myself divide it into pieces and talk about it, and then they get to eat whatever I brought. Now you can draw pictures, shapes, pies, pizza. I also have I didn't bring it along. It's a fraction set, and that's helped a lot. It shows, I think it breaks it all the way down into, is it sixteenths, I think. And so it's like a big plate, and then in the end it's just a big rectangle, really. It starts out with a whole, and then two halves, thirds, fourths, goes all the way down. Anyway, that's been really helpful, teaching, relating everything back to a whole. Make sure they understand the top and the bottom number. Okay, amounts. Cups, pints, quarts, and gallons. Show it. I always like to do something with measuring whenever we're working on this. CLE, there's often recipes of stuff you can do. Drink or tea or lemonade or something like that. Punch, it's always fun. It can end up being kind of a mess, but it's fun and worth it in the end, I think. I often will bring, I'll even bring jars and just have them sitting in my classroom, just kind of to relate gallons to quarts and pints and cups. And that has helped. Hanging up charts. And then, like I said, displaying stuff in the classroom, what they see and picture, they'll remember better. Okay, anything, any ideas on fractions or the amounts? Well, thank you for your ideas. It's good to hear some new things from other people. I get in a rut and I start doing one thing and do it year after year, and it's fun to hear stuff from other people. So I hope your year is successful in teaching math, because it is important.